Today is Tuesday, February 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, protests across the United States on Monday over the president's emergency declaration for border wall money. The fight for ISIS's last stronghold in Syria. President Trump warning Venezuela's military to stop taking orders from embattled leader Nicolas Maduro.
We're here to proclaim a new day is coming in Latin America. It's coming.
And rock band Queen will be performing at Sunday's Oscars ceremony in honor of a movie about the group. It's all on today's International Edition.
Soon and very soon, we will dump Donald Trump.
Protesters chanting and singing. All across the country, they are referring to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the president. Activists across the U.S. staged demonstrations on Monday's President's Day holiday to protest President Trump's declaration of a national emergency to secure funding for a U.S.-Mexico border wall. They're angered over Trump's invoking emergency powers on Friday under a 1976 law after Congress denied his request for more than $5 billion to help build the wall that was his signature 2016 campaign promise. The move was designed to let him spend money appropriated by Congress for other purposes. Protester Bishop Garrison.
The wall cannot be justified in the name of national security. There is no national security crisis at our border.
Demonstrators called Trump's declaration an abuse of power and usurpation of Congress. Trump says a wall is needed to curb illegal immigrants and illicit drugs coming across the border.
This is a wall that neither Mexico nor Congress want to pay for, that the American people do not want, and that will not make our nation any more secure.
Democrats have vowed to challenge it as a violation of the U.S. Constitution, and the lawsuits across the country have already started. Joining us now to talk more about that part of the story is attorney Anna Rose Mathiesen with the Appellate Law Group in San Francisco, California. Anna Rose, thanks for being with us. The lawsuit's already starting. Will we see a lot more?
There were some filed, I think, the very first day. Just today, California and at least 13 other states announced that they were also filing challenges. These challenges may kind of coalesce into various groups, but the challenges will keep on coming.
What legal arguments do both sides have?
The president's legal argument is there is a statute authorizing the president to declare a national emergency. And that statute makes a lot of sense when you look at it out of the context of this particular situation. There are often situations where a president needs to make decisions quickly and needs to be able to reallocate funding quickly without having Congress convened, without, it might not even be in session when the emergency happens. The emergency might have made it so it can't be in session in D.C. And there have been dozens of, I think five dozen of these emergencies declared since the act took effect in the 70s. And they typically are for things that we think of as a real emergency. 9/11, a fast-spreading disease, other things where a president needs to quickly mobilize resources. So the president's going to say, Congress gave me authority. I'm following the statute. I have authority. It didn't say what the definition of an emergency is. It just says the president can declare emergencies. And I think this is an emergency. So it has to be upheld. The argument on the other side is, one is that the president's own words undercut this. He has said, I didn't need to do this. I just wanted to get it done faster. And in fact, the situation hasn't changed much. If anything, it's gotten better in the last few years. This is certainly something that an issue that he flagged on the campaign trail. And we're actually at a relatively low rate for arrests and other things. His own administration statistics show that most of the drugs and other kind of contraband comes through ports of entries, not through these places where he's saying that there's an emergency that they need a wall to stop it. So they're saying you can't just say whatever you want is an emergency. If the president spent months trying to get this from Congress, Congress said no, threw the whole country into a shutdown. The president finally just threw a fit and used this as an end run around Congress. And that's not what the act was designed to do.
So do you think a stickler could be what defines an actual emergency?
There's two kind of different aspects to that. One is before this statute was passed, the president certainly had some broad background powers to act in emergencies. But there were Supreme Court cases dealing with that, which said when Congress has essentially refused to do this and the president acts anyways, the president is at the lowest point in his power. If the Congress has authorized it, then the president has the most authority. And the constitutional challenge to him relying on this statute is that he's essentially messing with separation of power. The Constitution says Congress shall be in charge of budgeting and allocating money. The president can spend and execute the laws, but he can't make them. This is something that he made very clear he wanted Congress to fund. Congress refused. And then he essentially did an end run around this and said, well, okay, I'm going to sign this budget bill, but I'm going to declare an emergency to get what you won't give me. And that is a power grab that is relatively unprecedented. So none of the other emergencies have dealt with that kind of situation. And it is a serious threat to separation of powers.
Was the president accurate when he said that the courts will probably rule against him and it will end up in the Supreme Court where he said they will hopefully do the, quote, right thing?
Well, he's certainly accurate that it will almost certainly end up in the Supreme Court unless his administration decides for some reason to push it away. There's no question that the challengers are going to keep pushing until they do what they can to stop this. So unless his side gives up, which they don't seem likely to do at this point, it will end up in the Supreme Court.
What happens in the meantime? Will he get the funding or will he have to wait till all the legal challenges are finished?
The only entity that can stop him at this point is the court. There are ways for Congress to try to stop this. They could pass a measure rejecting this emergency, but he can veto it. And then it would have to be passed again by veto-proof majorities, which is pretty unlikely. So the only obvious way to have it stop the interim is for the courts to essentially issue some sort of injunction saying he cannot reallocate this money.
That's attorney Anna Rose Mathiesen with the Appellate Law Group in San Francisco, California. Meanwhile, a new NPR PBS News Marist poll finds that more than 6 in 10 Americans disapprove of the president's declaration of a national emergency to get money to build a border wall. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The Saudi Crown Prince concludes a landmark Pakistan visit. Former Maldives president has been arrested over money laundering. Iraqi forces sexually abuse IS female relatives in Mosul. And the charity group that's turning leftover food into real help for needy people. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump was in Miami, Florida on Monday, where he called on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to step aside, and he warned that all options are open. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
The president has said opposition leader Juan Guaido is the rightful leader in Venezuela. He called Nicolas Maduro a Cuba puppet. He also had a message for the military supporting Maduro.
You will find no safe harbor, no easy exit, and no way out. You will lose everything.
The president says socialism has ravaged Venezuela.
Even the world's largest reserves of oil are no longer enough to keep the lights on.
He has been looking to draw a contrast with the policies of progressive Democrats back at home, which he brands as socialist.
America will never be a socialist country.
I'm Ed Donahue.
President Trump suggested Monday that key law enforcement officials engaged in, quote, treasonous activity when they considered invoking a constitutional amendment in 2017 to remove him from office while opening an obstruction of justice investigation against him. From his estate in Florida, Trump lashed out on Twitter Monday at former acting Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Andrew McCabe, who told the CBS News show 60 Minutes Sunday night that he was gravely concerned that the president might be aligned with the Russian government. He relays one story of the president dismissing American intelligence findings in favor of information he received from Russian President Vladimir Putin.
I was speaking to the man who had just run for the presidency and won the election for the presidency, and who might have done so with the aid of the government of Russia our most formidable adversary on the world stage. And that was something that troubled me greatly. I think the next day I met with the team investigating the Russia cases, and I asked the team to go back and conduct an assessment to determine where are we with these efforts and what steps do we need to take going forward. I was very concerned that I was able to put the Russia case on absolutely solid ground in an indelible fashion, that were I removed quickly or reassigned or fired, that the case could not be closed or vanish in the night without a trace. I wanted to make sure that our case was on solid ground, and if somebody came in behind me and closed it and tried to walk away from it, they would not be able to do that without creating a record of why they'd made that decision.
McCabe said he and current Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein had discussed employing the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, allowing a vice president and a majority of the 15 cabinet members to declare a president incapable of handling the duties of the presidency, making the vice president the acting president. But Trump ally Republican Senator Lindsey Graham expressed concerns about McCabe's comments.
It's stunning to me that one of the chief law enforcement officers of the land, the acting head of the FBI, would go on national television and say, oh, by the way, I remember a conversation with the deputy attorney general about trying to find if we could replace the president under the 25th Amendment.
Graham, who is chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, tells CBS's Face the Nation that his committee will look into McCabe's claim.
We will have a hearing about who's telling the truth, what actually happened. Mr. Cabe, you remember, was dismissed from the FBI for leaking information to the press, so you got to remember the source here.
McCabe, who was fired by former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, has been doing interviews to promote his new book on the subject of the Trump-Russia investigation. The memoir is called The Threat. And now to the battle against ISIS in Syria. Islamic State fighters are refusing to surrender to U.S.-backed Syrian forces and are asking for a safe exit from their last stronghold in eastern Syria. Syrian Democratic Forces, a U.S.-backed Kurdish alliance, said that IS fighters have been surrounded in a small area in the eastern Syrian province of Deir el-Zor. Joining us with details is VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden. Jeff, what's the latest in this last stronghold of what seems like an endless crisis?
The situation, the advance and the efforts to clear out Islamic State from its last sliver of land of its self-declared caliphate outside of Baghouz, this little village in eastern Syria, has really slowed. It's almost, you could say, at an impasse. You have about 300 mostly Islamic State foreign fighters holed up in what's really a tent city, or a very small tent city, but they're protecting themselves with up to 1,000 civilians, either family members, women and children who are part of ISIS or who were part of the caliphate, prisoners, and possibly still some hostages as well. So the advance is really slowed. The coalition is reluctant to go in there and bomb because of the number of innocent bystanders, but attempts to negotiate with these last ISIS fighters really haven't gone very far. Observers on the ground say that perhaps these fighters are trying to negotiate some safe passage out of Baghouz. There are reports that they've asked for safe passage to get to Iraq, or also that they've made a request to be allowed to travel safely to Turkey. The Syrian Democratic Forces, the forces backed by the U.S. and the coalition, have rejected those offers. So everybody's kind of at a standstill trying to figure out perhaps who's going to blink first and how do you eliminate this last pocket of resistance. They're low on supplies, it seems, according to accounts from the Syrian Democratic Forces. Some of the commanders were giving journalists in the area tours of the surrounding areas, giving them views looking on to this little group of tents where the remaining survivors of the Islamic State caliphate are holed up, trying to hold out. At the same time, there have been some counterattacks. There are a network of tunnels, possibly some caves as well, that the Islamic State fighters have been using, and they've launched some counterattacks in the immediate area of the village of Baghouz. Also, some strikes further afield. The SDF has been able to repel them, although sometimes it's had to call in some coalition or U.S. air power to do so. But it's a very precarious situation. And again, a very small area, a high concentration of civilians, non-combatants, even if they are ISIS members. And so everybody's trying to be very careful, trying to end this standoff so that the coalition in the United States can say formally the Islamic State caliphate has been eradicated.
And, of course, avoid as many civilian deaths as possible, I'm sure. We've been hearing pretty horrific stories in the past years that this has been going on.
Until very recently, there have been blows and just hundreds of civilians coming out of this area, so many that it surprised the Syrian Democratic Forces and kind of tipped them off to the fact that there were civilians and fighters hiding in these tunnels and these caves. That flow has slowed to a trickle now. The civilians that have been coming out, though, many of them are saying that they'd like to go home. They're willing to cooperate, especially the families of foreign fighters or Westerners who have come and went to Syria to join the Islamic State. So there's a lot of information coming out, but at the same time, it's still a precarious situation, and there seems to be at least a group of Islamic State fighters holed up in this little area that are either going to negotiate their way out to freedom somehow or seem willing to fight to the death.
The International Rescue Committee on Monday came out with some numbers that were pretty unsettling, too. A spokesman said that more than 60 people have died in recent weeks after making their way out of that last area controlled by Islamic State, and that, you know, exhaustion and malnutrition were the main causes of these deaths, and that two-thirds of them were children under the age of one, that they either died along the way or soon after arriving at these refugee camps. Is it that treacherous once they even get out of the way of the fighting, or is it just that they literally have no supplies?
Supplies in the area are running low. There are Syrian Democratic Force officials who say it's likely that they're beginning to run out of ammunition. There, as part of the negotiations, there have been reports by observers on the ground that the SDF actually allowed a couple of truckloads of food to be brought in to this last remaining territory, these few hundred square meters that ISIS is holding on to, where it has its fighters and, like we said, up to 1,000 civilians. So that's been part of the negotiations. It's not clear if that was the reason why later on the Islamic State released about 10 prisoners that they held, SDF fighters who had been captured by the Islamic State. But there is a recognition that supplies are low, the situation is tough, and that civilians in the area are suffering, and there's a lot of concern given to how to proceed to make sure that as the Islamic State, the caliphate, is ultimately destroyed and the fighters are either killed or taken into custody, that the children especially are not put into harm's way.
All right, that's VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon. Thanks for your perspective. Iran says Europe's efforts to keep the 2015 nuclear deal are failing, and there's growing support among the Iranian people to restart the country's atomic program. Speaking at the Munich Security Conference Sunday, Tehran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, accused the U.S. and Israel of seeking war against his country. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence earlier had accused Europe of helping to prop up a murderous regime in Tehran. Henry Ridgewell reports from the conference.
Europe is treading a thin line, attempting to pacify its transatlantic ally while trying to keep the Iran nuclear deal alive. In recent days, those tensions were laid bare.
They've led the effort to create mechanisms to break up our sanctions. They call this scheme a special purpose vehicle. We call it an effort to break American sanctions against Iran's murderous revolutionary regime.
That special purpose vehicle, officially known as INSTEX, is a payment system designed to allow European companies to trade with Iran and bypass US sanctions.
By not involving US dollars, not involving US persons, and certainly at the moment only being involved in the procurement of trade, which does not include products or services that are sanctioned by the US authorities.
Those conditions have not satisfied Iran.
INSTEX falls short of the commitments by the E3 to save the nuclear deal. Europe needs to be willing to get wet if it wants to swim against the dangerous tide of U.S. unilateralism.
Europe is hoping that Iran will show patience.
Right here in Munich.
I think on the Iranian side, they will play a waiting game and very much hope that next year Donald Trump might not be re-elected.
In Europe, Vice President Pence's speech at Munich has triggered fears that Washington has bigger plans.
Not at all a call for let's renegotiate the deal, but rather let's remove the regime in Tehran.
Washington has not explicitly called for regime change in Iran, but the US, Israel and many Arab states are growing increasingly vocal about the threat that Tehran poses.
Despite pressure from allies in the Middle East and in America, Europe is sticking by the nuclear agreement. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News at the Munich Security Conference, Germany.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. More than 170 films from around the world are being shown at the 27th annual Pan-African Film and Arts Festival in Los Angeles. The multi-day event aims to connect Africans and their counterparts from around the world. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details.
It is a festival that features the arts in all its different forms. But there is one common love that inspires all the artists.
I never think of us as African American. I think of us as Africans in America. And then coming from that perspective, the ancestral lineage of art in Africa is beyond belief.
But it's not just Black Americans who are here at the Pan-African Film and Arts Festival. Descendants of Africans from different parts of the globe are also showing off their artistry in fine art and film.
As a result of the slave trade and colonization, African people are spread all over the planet. So we get a chance through this festival to get a chance to know each other.
More than 170 Black films are being shown at the festival. Among them is a movie by actress and filmmaker Stephanie Linus.
Connecting all of us through film that is especially about us, and we can see a reflection of ourselves and tell our stories and get a better understanding about where I'm coming from.
Linus's film called Dry is about child marriage and the devastating effects of a practice that can be found around the world.
So I use a tool of filmmaking to bring attention to them, to get people to know about their problem, to get people to know the consequences that happen when you make those kind of decisions, and, you know, force them to have conversation about this. I'm happy that people are taking proactive action because we screened the movie in Gambia, and a month later, the government banned child marriage in Gambia.
Promoting dialogue and education through film and the arts is a main goal of the festival.
So we know there's some profound things happening around the Black world, and so this is a way to amplify that and make people pay attention.
And he adds to create awareness among lawmakers of the social issues faced by Africans and people with African roots around the world. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
No sign of vow of poverty. Clean her up before the whole house starts smelling.
Well, the sailor in the iconic VJ Day Times Square kiss photo has died. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports the man in the photo of the Times Square celebration at the end of World War II became one of the most famous photographs of the 20th century.
The sailor shown kissing a woman in an iconic photo of the Times Square celebration marking Japan's surrender ending World War II has died. George Mendonca was 95. The photo by Alfred Eisenstadt that was first published in Life magazine came to be known as The Kiss. In it, George Mendonca was kissing Greta Zimmer Friedman, a dental assistant in a nurse's uniform, on August 14, 1945. They did not know each other, and it was years before Mendonca and Friedman were confirmed to be the couple. Friedman died in 2016 at the age of 92. I'm Mike Rossia.
Is this the real life?
fantasy, caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes.
British rock band Queen will be performing live at next Sunday's Oscar ceremony following the blockbuster success of Best Picture nominee movie Bohemian Rhapsody. The Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences announced the news on its official Twitter account Monday. The tweet said, "Is this the real life? Is it just fantasy? We welcome at Queen Will Rock and at Adam Lambert to this year's Oscars." Adam Lambert, of American Idol fame, will sing the vocals of the late Freddie Mercury. The film Bohemian Rhapsody is nominated for 5 Oscars.
Just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life it just...
And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us and spending some time here. Thank you so much to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day. Will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo,
Figaro,
Magnifico.
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family, sparing his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah, no, we will not let you go.
Let him go.
We will not let you go.
Let him go.
Bismillah. We will not let you go.
Let me go.
We will not let you go.
Let me go.
We will not let you go.
Never let me go.
No.
Oh, Mamma Mia, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me. For me.
Just gotta get out.
This is VOA News. I'm